Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
I'm Dr. Deborah Lynn Katz, and I'm guest host on the new Thinking Aloud, produced by Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Today, I'll be speaking with none other than Joshua Lewis. Joshua is the author of Finding Hope in the Afterlife, and he is also the founder and director of Hope Paranormal. It's an organization that helps people connect with their deceased loved ones, and he also conducts paranormal investigations all over the world. He's also a director and filmmaker, and he is the creator of an app, Hope Spirit Box. This app helps people to connect with spirits that will come through their mobile devices, such as their cell phones and tablets. How is this possible? Well, let's find out by hearing from Josh directly. And thank you for joining us on the new Thinking Aloud. All right, Joshua Lewis with Hope Paranormal. I am really excited to be talking to you tonight. And we are going to have a roller coaster ride here. You know, I'm a big fan of your work. And at the same time, I'm going to have to ask you some tough questions because we have people in the audience that are paranormal enthusiasts, hardcore researchers, and skeptics. And they are going to want me to ask you some hard questions. And I know you'll come through with the answers. But let's get started. How did you first get involved in instrumental transcommunication? We will talk about what that is, but why don't we just talk a little bit about your journey and background, and then we'll get into the topic.
It's an honor to be here. I'm a big fan of Jeffrey's channel. I've been following his interviews for a while and stuff, so it's really wonderful to be able to kind of speak to his audience and kind of share the work that I'm doing. And of course, I'm a big fan of yours because you've been such an instrumental part of my journey and in my development. You know, I started out, let's see, I started out really just kind of as a paranormal investigator, a very novice paranormal investigator. I've heard you use the term, you know, like citizen scientist, you know, and that's something that kind of I was. I started working with other teams out in the field of different, you know, different locations and things like that. And, you know, I would just record regular EVP with a voice recorder. And I was, you know, getting intelligent responses to me asking questions. And I was hearing my name being repeated and, you know, other names and answers like yes and no and very basic responses, but again, it was electronic voice phenomenon, and I would also test with some other types of devices, very basic things, but again, there was some really undeniable evidence. What I ended up finding was that I was having an ability intuitively, an intuitive ability that was starting to come about. And when I noticed that I was starting to pick up things before I would hear them through the recorder or through the devices, I knew something was going on within me. And that's when I sought you out. And this was over 10 years ago now. And I found you and I found the International School of Clairvoyance. And I got to work with you on a very intense level, you know, privately and, you know, that was just remarkable when you first said, you know, I'm going to give you a name and I'm not going to tell you anything about that person. I'm not going to tell you if they're alive or dead. I'm not going to give you a last name. I'm just going to give you a name. And then I want you to cold read them that name for 30 minutes. And I'm not going to give you any feedback, Josh, you know. And here I am giving you all this information. And at the end, you go, you know, yes, this is right. This was this person. This information was right. You said this, you said that, you said this. And I knew, You know, so now fast forward, you know, over 10 years, I've done over 3,000 intuitive readings, you know, mediumship readings for people. I've also done a number, hundreds of box sessions, of ITC sessions, reaching out to people's loved ones. So it's been a remarkable journey.
It is somewhat unusual to be both an ITC researcher, someone that goes out, does investigations at different potentially haunted places and using equipment, and at the same time be using your intuitive abilities. I mean, you would think that the two would go together, but a lot of times you find that paranormal researchers or ITC researchers may be working with other intuitives, but not developing that themselves. How critical or relevant is it that you do both?
It's a great question, and I think that I'm kind of an anomaly on my own as far as being that. I've always seen paranormal people being bigger skeptics, yet they have some kind of belief because they've captured some evidence on their own that kind of made them a believer, yet they're still, you know, of course, trying to, you know, debunk things. And that's what I'm still always trying to do. So it's not like I'm, you know, completely in la la land where I believe everything that I get. I'm still trying to debunk, you know, in every session or every investigation or things that I'm doing. But then, you know, then you've got the mediums and you've got the intuitives. And when you mention equipment and scientific research on that level, they don't, you know, they're not into that really. They're more into the intuitive side, and they believe in their ability, and they have to believe in order for it to work. And so when you marry the two, when you bring them together, something very special, I think, happens. For me, this doesn't work unless I'm intuitive. And at the same time, just me being intuitive and getting information through me is not enough. I want more proof. I want definitive proof. I want proof that is going to be, you know, audible. I want proof that's going to be visual. So I want to see actual evidence that, of course, if it can back up or validate what I'm getting on an intuitive level, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen that when we did a recent informal investigation where we, I gave you some different names of remote viewing professionals and researchers, and I hadn't worked with you directly with the equipment, and we will talk about the equipment more specifically in just a few minutes, but I was impressed how when we got together, you didn't just jump right into the equipment. You meditated and tuned in, and in fact, you were getting correct information per the people's names I was giving you. And I wasn't giving you their names. I was really just giving you initials. So I saw how that was working. Do you find that if you don't meditate in advance or try to do your intuitive work ahead of time, that your session turns out different with the equipment?
Good question. Yeah. I mean, that was a really great, like, as you call it, an exploratory experiment. And that's really what it was. It was wonderful. I mean, you assigned numbers, you know, target numbers in a sense, to the people that you already had chosen and kind of intuitively reached out to on your own, but you didn't tell me who they were. And you would just give me a target number. And then with the target number, I would look and I would see and I'd say, oh, this is an older man, or this is a woman, this is a foreign man, this, you know, I see dark hair, I see short hair, I see this. And, you know, if you, you know, and that video is on the preview video on my channel, where I give the, you know, I gave the presentation at the conference, at the IRVA conference, Monroe IRVA conference, and then I show the session that we did. And it's really great because, you know, you're not telling me anything and I have to tune in. So in order for my sessions to work, or in order for the connection to be better, I have to connect on an intuitive level. I can just turn on my equipment and say, who's there? Or, you know, if they give me a name, if someone wants to reach a loved one, I can just kind of turn it on and say, you know, is this person there? But if I do that, you'll hear a lot of responses saying, you know, connect. You have to connect. Like, you'll hear that coming through the equipment. And because they know that in order for them to come through, I have to intuitively connect. So yeah, in order for this to work, and I write about it in my book right here. I show, you know, my book is Finding Hope in the Afterlife. And you can, you know, I mentioned that you have to do that. You have to connect. You won't maybe get it all perfectly, all the information yourself, but it will work a lot better. And I think that's something that, you know, the scientific community is maybe not ready to accept yet, because they want, you know, very strict, you know, protocol when it comes to a controlled experiment, which is fine. I totally get that. And there's really, you know, there's a lot of potential to what we can do, but I'm always open to trying new things. You know, I worked with, you know, I know Jeffrey was the winner of the essay contest, I think, at BICS, Bigelow Institute of Consciousness Studies. And I got to work with them. You know, I got to work with them and their head PhD over there, where, you know, he wanted to test my ability on two different experiments. And so he said the same thing. He said, you know, we're going to call you at a day and time, and I'm going to have a sitter on. She's just going to give her first name, and you're going to tune in to this person and see what loved one is around them, if you can pick up. And then after you've done that for 20 or 30 minutes with no feedback, we're not going to give you any feedback, even on the call, then you can turn on your equipment and see if, you know, anything extra or anything else comes through. And both experiments went exceptionally well.
Bring up a good point. Now, researchers today, I think with the different studies in the experimenter effect, they're becoming more aware that who the experimenter is, what their attitude, how they interact with the participants, who are sometimes, well, psychic participants or remote viewers, they're recognizing that makes a difference. But you bring up something interesting. It's also recognized that meditators and people preparing themselves through meditation initially are oftentimes going to be doing better in experiments, but you don't usually hear about the experimenters meditating ahead of time, you know, and that's oftentimes a question like, oh, what did you do to prepare your participants? But I think that would be a great idea for experiments moving forward, any kind of parapsychology experiments, to have the experimenter actually meditating and, you know, doing whatever they can potentially do to tune in as well.
Well, can I just say one thing about that? You know, that's interesting you mentioned that, because if I do a session or I just do a reading, now again, I do more readings without equipment than I do with. So, you know, the majority of the readings that people book with me, I'm doing on my own, using my own intuitive ability. But whether I don't do anything without meditating and preparing myself. But, you know, today I had a reading of a woman. I called her at the scheduled time that she had, scheduled. And I send everyone an email, a confirmation email. And in there is a 20-minute meditation, guided meditation that I guide them through. It's a video link, and they just have to watch it. It takes 20 minutes, sit quietly in a chair, listen to the sound of my voice, and, you know, follow along on the cues, the verbal cues that I give. And, when I got on the phone with her, I said, just want to check before we even begin, were you able to do the meditation? And she said, oh no, I must have missed the email. And I said, well, you know what? I said, it's not that big of a deal to just wait an extra 20 minutes. I'm going to send you the link. Go ahead and do it, and I'll call you back in 20 minutes. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, sure enough, you know, again, the way I run my readings is the same way that you pretty much taught me, which is, at least, you know, even if it's an hour reading, the first 15 minutes of the reading, all they're going to do is tell me the name, the first and last name. They'll say it three times, and then I just want them to stay quiet for 15 minutes or so. and not give me any yes or no cues, no noddings, no nothing. You know, I don't want to, you know. And, you know, she gave me the name. I was able to connect. I got that it was her son, what he looked like, how he died. All of those facts came through, and she said, yep, that was right. I was off by like one thing, but, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. But all the other stuff was accurate. So about 90-something percent of the information I gave her was accurate, and that's it. But I firmly believe that because she did the meditation, she prepared herself properly.
That's very interesting, and I would love to listen to that meditation, because that's something I don't typically do. I prepare myself, but I just tell them, you know, yeah, just come on to the call. But then I have definitely noticed many times, and one of the reasons I like to usually spend at least an hour with a person is because initially they kind of, and this is even if they're silent the whole time. So let's say, you know, you get on the phone and they don't give you any feedback for an hour. But still, you can feel they're more clammed up initially. You know, there's this thing like, oh, what's going on? This is confusing. And I mean, this is all on a psychic level, but you can, you know, so, not with everyone, but with some people, you know, it's like they're getting more relaxed because they're confused, they're nervous, they're, you know, we're strangers. And now there's someone trying to pry open their field. And so, yeah, that idea that at least if they're meditating, they're going to be relaxed, if nothing else. That's really cool. Well, so let's back up a little bit. Now, not everyone is familiar with the term ITC. And so let's start with that. And then we'll go into the different equipment that you use during paranormal investigations and the equipment that you use when you're like one-on-one online with people.
You know, it's over 100 years old, pretty much, as far as what I've come to understand. And when it started with guys like Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, Frederick Jurgensen, Konstantin Radovao, a brilliant Latvian psychologist. These are guys that were brilliant minds that in their own field, their own fields, I should say. And yet they still had this this hunger, this you know, interest in going further and using technology to do it. And so, you know, Thomas Edison worked on a device, an apparatus to create one that he can communicate interdimensionally. I mean, that's not something that he was, you know, running around sharing with everyone, but, you know, he was definitely working on that. Tesla did the same thing. He had the Tesla, you know, radio. And so he worked on a couple of different devices. And he made contact, he felt. You know, Frederick Jurgensen was someone who was a filmmaker. He had a voice recorder that he left on his windowsill to record additional audio for one of his films. And when he went back to review the footage or the audio, he heard voices and, you know, intelligible voices that were coming through that were saying things that he, you know, I mean, that was just undeniable. Konstantin Radovao, you know, he did a lot of different experiments, and he said, you know, ITC is no hobby. It's not something just for people that have lost touch with reality. It's a very serious research for people that, you know, really want to take it seriously. And, you know, there are accounts and reports of him coming through a phone and some other things after his demise physically. So, you know, there was a guy also named Frank Sumption. He was someone that created the first radio skip, I can't think of the term, but, you know, radio spirit box, pretty much. And so, you know, Marcello Bacci is another one. He's another, you know, brilliant, you know, man who was Italian. He took the transistor out of the radio so that it would not pick up radio signals, and it was just kind of a, you know, like a sound that the radio would pick up, kind of like almost like a white noise. And you can tell, you can hear, when he would make a connection intuitively, he would kind of ask his team on the other side if they could make a connection with said souls or whatever, and you would hear these connections starting to come through in these voices. And he invited many outside people, reporters and other investigators, to come in and witness his work. And so, you know, a lot of really good evidence has been captured using instrumental transcommunication. And really what that is using any kind of electronic device to capture, voices that, you know, if someone wants to say, well, you know, we don't know if they're spirit, we don't know if they're alien, we don't know what they are, you know what I mean? But we want to rule out radio signals, we want to rule out outside interference. I always enjoyed using kind of these radio boxes, but a lot of times it, you know, you can get false positives. That's really the biggest problem that, you know, an ITC researcher will have is, you know, false positives, picking up voices that is not really spirit or not, you know, an entity or an intelligent being interdimensionally.
Can you explain a little bit more about this idea of white noise coming through, or why do you need any kind of noise in the background coming through?
Well, I don't think that you necessarily do. That was Marcello Bacci's setup, and he didn't want any radio coming through. He wanted to prove to the skeptics that there's no, I'm taking out the, you know, the receiver part of this radio, so there it should not pick up any radio signals. If you show any skeptic today, you know, a radio spirit box, you may be able to pick up a direct response that's kind of almost undeniable. They'll say your name, they'll answer a question very directly, but again, it could still be written off as a coincidence coming in from a radio broadcast. With me, I've gone one step further. I don't like the white noise because it makes it harder to hear. So I thought, you know, I've asked many paranormal people, I said, well, how do you think a radio spirit box works? You know, what do you think it is? And they'll say, you know, I've had a few people say, well, we think the spirit or the entity, the energy is timing up a piece of the radio broadcast to you know, they're grabbing a word from it to time it up to answer your question, kind of, you know. And I said, well, I don't think it is. I think, you know, my theory is that they're taking errant sound, bits and pieces of sound, and they're forming their own speech with it. So in order to test that theory, I decided to take human speech and reverse it, slow it down by 50%, even more than that, sometimes even slower, and then chop it up into 2 second increments, even shorter than that, and randomize it. And just so now we've got a track of pure gibberish. So when we have this gibberish track, it's either they're going to take a part of that track and form their own speech, or nothing's going to come through and I'm just going to hear gibberish. So if they're not using it, then I'm not going to get a false positive. I'm just going to hear a bunch of gibberish like the track is. And so that's something that I've tested with for many years now. And, you know, I believe that I've proven that, you know, spirit takes sound and manipulates it to form their own speech. If you don't do that, if you don't give them something to use, they don't have vocal cords. So they're not going to be able to, you know, you can sometimes get this disembodied voice. It is rare, but you have this very low toned kind of almost whisper. You know, that is an EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. But to give them really something that they can use, I have to give them raw audio for them to use. And that seems to be working quite well. But it's, you know, people doubt it very much still. And I keep trying to show full transparency and I don't have a problem. If anyone's respectful, I have no problem explaining the process, showing the sound source. You know, I sent you the sound source after we did our experiment so you could investigate it and check it out. So, you know, if someone's open-minded enough to investigate the process, they're going to find some really amazing things there. But a lot of people's beliefs really cut them off from even going any further. It just, you know, to them, it's just, it's impossible.
So how are you sure you're really just getting gibberish? How do you know that an actual real word, you know, especially since you could have just a one syllable no in there, or simple words, how can you be sure that you're just taking the gibberish?
Well, I mean, I'm creating the soundtrack. So, I mean, I'm taking human speech and again, I'm reversing it. Can you hear an actual word in reversed audio? Sure. It isn't, it's not impossible. There's sound pareidolia as well. You know, it's kind of an auditory illusion, you know. So, you know, we're looking for information that we can actually, you know, hang our hat on, actual factual information that, you know, is real. So, you know, it is still interpretational to some degree. You know, we are getting clearer responses that are more direct, but at the same time, you know, there is still, you know, more to be investigated on. And I'll give you one example, and I showed it, and I have many examples like this, but, you know, one example is, I had a woman that followed me for a while. She, you know, she got cancer. She contacted me. She said, you know, Josh, I'm dying. And when I, you know, when I pass, I don't have very much long, you know, longer to live. And when I pass, I would like for you to, you know, have my family reach out to me. And I said, okay. And so, she did pass a few months later. Her husband, who is not necessarily someone that believes in this, but loved her and wanted to follow through with her wishes, contacted me, and he was very respectful. And he said, you know, Kimberly wanted me to ask you if you could reach out to her. So I did. I did a session. I asked for her, and we captured some really amazing responses about she's okay. She's still feeling emotional, though. There was still, like, you know, she was still going through her afterlife process. And she said, you know, light and love, it's the same thing. It was some really cool responses. And I sent that to him. And, you know, he called me back and he said, you know, Josh, this was amazing, but please don't feel offended when I say this. He goes, how do I know that's really her? Or how do I know, you know, like, I can hear the words, but how do I know it's her? And I said, it's a great question. And it's a very valid question. It's not something I'm going to be offended about or by. But, you know, I said, ask a validating question. That's all we can do, is just ask some validating questions. And he said, okay. He goes, ask her what the term muskrat meant. That's it. He said, I'm just going to give you that term, muskrat, nothing else, you know, and just ask her what that means. So I asked her, I went back, I asked in a session, I said, Kimberly, what is that term mean to you guys? Muskrat, that's it. And she said, it's in the back of my head. We had to shave my head. And that was it. Two responses came through my box. And so I captioned it like a forensic audio expert would, that, like, reviews surveillance, you know, audio, like they, you know. And so I used my expertise. I put the captions on what I heard. I sent that clip back to him, and he texted me back and he said, this was perfect. This is exactly the perfect response. And I said, well, what does it mean? And he said, well, she was, you know, bedridden. And when she was, you know, in her bed, she would, you know, she was worried about the back of her head getting matted, her hair. And so I would check her hair and I'd pick her head up and I'd comb her hair. And eventually we had to just shave her head. So that was something only between those two. And, you know, if I played those responses for 10 people, 10 laymen that don't normally hear these kinds of things, you know, would all 10 of them hear those response, you know, hear that response exactly as I heard it? I don't know. I think maybe more than half would hear it pretty clearly. But there might be four people, maybe five, about four, I would say, that would say, I don't know if I hear that all completely, you know. But the fact is, the information was accurate.
in that particular case, if you hadn't written, put the what you heard onto the file and just left it for him to listen to, do you think he would have heard those same words?
He would have heard the word head. He would have heard maybe like back, head, shave. He would have heard a few of the words. But, you know, I mean, that's why, you know, I had an opportunity to work with Ed Primo briefly, who is a forensic audio expert. He did the Trump tapes. He did that flight that disappeared. He did some really very famous cases. And you know, a lot of times the FBI would call him in to transcribe mob recordings, mob surveillance recordings, you know, so that he can clean up the audio and then caption it and testify, to his expertise of what was being said. So, you know, there is a level of expertise that is needed, but my goal is to make this, or to keep working at it, so that it's as clear as possible that anyone can hear it. You know, I heard a recording the other day of someone that was on a phone call from the 9/11 towers. And when I was listening to it, I could barely hear what was being said. Yet they had all these captions of what was being said. And I'm like, well, who did this recording? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not doubting that it was inaccurate. I'm sure everything was being said. But it's like, you know, speech is funny. You know, how do we know that someone is saying something? How many times does our partner say something and we're like, what? What? You know, and we have to kind of, you know, call out to hear what they're being said. They're really speaking and they are saying something. We're just missing a word or two and we have to kind of reposition ourselves to hear what they're saying.
I know that was also a difficulty with the early IDC researchers like Jurgensen. Initially, a lot of people did not hear what he heard, and he said it was really a matter of training himself, like having to listen over and over again, and he would get people singing, and I think he was initially listening to bird songs when he started to notice voices and songs in all different kinds of languages. And so, yeah, it took a while. And he said that over the years, they did get clear so that other people then could hear what he heard without him first telling them. And I know I've listened to quite a bit of yours, and I would say like maybe about half, I don't hear what you hear. And the other half, maybe not quite, maybe like 30%, I hear exactly what you hear. Even before you say it, I'm hearing the same thing. And I know when we were at the International Remote Viewing Conference this last summer, and you played some examples, you played some great examples. And there's still people talking about it. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Like one that stood out was with Ingo Swann, where again, you didn't know that was who I was giving you, but I just gave you the initials. And you asked him what was going to be happening at the upcoming IRVA conference, because really the organization in many ways is it largely celebrates his work and the work of so many others in the remote viewing government programs. So you asked, well, what can we expect from the upcoming conference? And tell us what he said.
So that was Elizabeth. That was Elizabeth Targ that said that. And so it was really cool because you asked her, you said, well, what can we expect at the conference? And, you know, pardon my French, but she said, you know, the same shit.
It was so clear.
And it was so awesome, you know.
So clear.
And you also, you know, the woman that came through the best was your friend, I think, Susan or Luna. She was great because you said, you know, how do you feel? And she said, you know, I feel the same. And that was really interesting. You know, she said something about she felt the same on the other side, like she still felt like herself. And that was really amazing. And you said it before I did. You heard, you go, she just said she feels something. I heard her. So, you know, the other night I had about 10 people on a Zoom session. I do a live group session once a month for all the people that, you know, some of the people that follow me. And if they want to join in and ask for a loved one. And I have this woman on, her name is Allison Stryker. Her dad was this famous correspondent. He used to do, his name is Gary Stryker. And Gary has done some really amazing, you know, work. I remember listening to his voice. I think he did some CNN stuff. He did, you know, some other really cool programs. And so Gary, we asked for her father a lot, and he does very well. Now, I don't think it's coincidental that he's able to communicate very well, and he was in communications, you know, when he was alive. I mean, that was his job, to communicate effectively and clearly, you know, on camera and through audio. And so it's not crazy to me that, you know, he used to edit all his own videos when he would, you know, do a lot of his correspondence stuff. And so we had 10 people on, and Allison says, you know, Dad, I had this dream where you were in it, and it was so real, and it was just so comforting and amazing. You know, was that you? And the response, you know, it was me. I mean, perfectly. And I heard it immediately, but everyone else heard it. They were like, oh my God. You know, she was laughing because it's the greatest feeling in the world. You know, you ask 10 questions and, you know, you get two or three responses maybe that are something like that, that definitive. You don't need captions. You don't need anyone to interpret it in any way. You don't need a forensic audio expert. It's just pure communication and it's undeniable. And that came from pure gibberish. That came from pure gibberish. There was no words in the sound source. So,
yeah, I actually watched that one earlier today on your TikTok channel, which I want to say a few words about. But I watched that one, and the thing that really stood out to me was how excited everyone got, how excited she was. And it's a great example of, in a very short time, how healing it can be for somebody to get to hear that communication, as short as it is, you know, whether you look at it as evidence of their survival or of their presence or just that connection again that they're getting to have. But, you know, I know you're not like a trained therapist and you're not thinking of it like you're doing therapy with them. However, there is such a therapeutic effect from this work.
There really is. And I'll tell you right now, I've worked with a lot of people that have lost loved ones, you know, parents that have lost children, lost parents, lost spouses, right? But I've had people that have been with me following my work that were alive following my work, then they died, and then their loved ones contact me to tell me that, you know, your follower, Josh, the person's been following your work, just passed. I miss him so much. You know, can you, you know, reach out to them? Kind of like that Kimberly story that I was telling you. And what's interesting about it is the person who just lost that person, their grief process, the normal grief process would, you know, is a lot longer for someone that doesn't get immediate, you know, communication like they would when they're working with someone like myself. And so I can see how the grief process has been cut down dramatically. I mean, they're still in grief. They're still feeling the physical loss of their loved one. But now they know within just a matter of weeks that, or they're getting information from the other side that's really proving that their loved one is coming through, that they're okay. They feel the same, like Susan was saying, like your first teacher, you know, that, you know, they're in the light, they're feeling light, they're experiencing some kind of bliss or joy or peace. And all of a sudden now, like that woman laughed on that video, that clip that you saw earlier, she just instantly felt that, like, you know, she just felt so much better hearing it. And, you know, I mean, that's the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah, and you know, you just hear that. I see that in my work, but you hear that so much from mediums. From even, I just interviewed a twin psychologist who she doesn't specialize in parapsychology, but when I asked her if she has witnessed like twin telepathy, she said that the most common incident is when a twin has their twin die. And then they feel like the twin is coming back and communicating from the afterlife. And she and I said, well, you know, does that make a very big difference in their trajectory or therapy? And she said, enormous, that people that get that communication back. And, you know, in their case, they may not be going to a medium. They're just getting this telepathic communication, like, you know, maybe when they're waking up at night or, you know, at different times when they quiet, they're getting that communication. And she said, exponentially speeds up their healing. So this is really important work. Now, one thing that I found to be really fascinating, like you have these clients that pass on and then come back to communicate to their loved ones. And that seems to be a theme in ITC, in the ITC history of researchers, like you mentioned Radov. I believe he came back after he studied this phenomenon, and then he came back through someone's television set, I believe. I might be getting it jumbled up.
It was a telephone, and I've heard those recordings. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, it's kind of hard for me to validate that. You know, they sound exceptionally well, like exceptionally good, these recordings. So, you know, that is still something. I'm still a skeptic myself when it comes to this work. I think there's a healthy skepticism that I have because I don't want to believe anything that's not real. I don't want to buy into something that, or I don't want to let my wishful thinking of any kind take me in a direction that it misleads me. So, you know, I mean, I've always enjoyed looking at like the skull experiment and what they were able to do there. You know, some people say, well, you know, it was a controlled environment and they had a lot of outside people that were allowed to observe, but there was a lot of stuff that they wouldn't let being done, you know, with the lights on. Now they say that the lights would kind of cancel out the ectoplasm or it would kind of mess with the phenomenon that would happen. And so it needed to happen in a dark environment. And of course, you know, from spiritualism in the 1800s, there was a lot of people that wanted the environment to be dark for physical mediumship because they weren't doing the right thing. They were doing a lot of, you know, unscrupulous things. You know what I mean? So that's unfortunate. Those recordings of Konstantin Radovao are very intriguing. They're really amazing. You know what I mean? Do I think it's possible? Yeah, I just don't. I haven't had anyone call me on my phone like that. But I have reached out to a few people that I've known very closely that passed on. And because I had a very good connection with them, I believe the session and the evidence was extraordinary. It really was. It was quite remarkable. You know, and so, you know, they're reporting from the other side, I believe, and they're giving some, you know, mostly positive, a positive report of what they're encountering on the other side.
You know, I've barely ever told anyone this, but I believe it's highly possible that my grandmother called me after she died. She had just passed away, and we were at my uncle's house. We had gone to the funeral, and we came back to his house to, you know, all have our kind of meal together and just be together. And I was staying in the room upstairs of his house, and I went upstairs just to get something. And when I got up to the room, my phone rang, and I picked up the phone. And I heard a voice, and it sounded just like my grandmother's voice. But right before she died, she had had some kind of strokes, a series of strokes, so she couldn't really talk clearly. It was just like, you know, kind of mumbling. And that's what I heard. And it went on for like about 20 seconds and then disconnected. So, you know, was that, it sounded just like her, you know, I can't swear that it was, but yeah, I was pretty freaked out. But you know, there's some, a couple of great books, about that topic, right? Like Phone Calls from the Dead. I think that one is Scott Rogo, and, there's a couple others. So yeah, this is so fascinating. And, even in the lineage of physical mediumship, there's mediums that would, when they died, then they would come through to other mediums. And then also sometimes even their guides, maybe their main spirit guides, would then go over to another medium some years later, and that medium would channel the same guides. There's even like multiple, there's a guide called Mr. Peebles, where I've seen a woman do full body channeling. I was like sitting shoulder to shoulder next to her in a small room, and full body channeling where, you know, her whole musculature changed, her whole face changed, almost her, I won't say for sure her eye color changed, but her eyes looked totally different, and her voice, you know, dropped tremendously. So it was full body trans channeling of this guy who lived in the early 1900s named Dr. Peebles. But then I was really surprised because I found out, well, she's not the only one channeling Dr. Peebles. There's multiple people at once. So, you know, do they just think they are? Does Mr. Peebles, Dr. Peebles, does he just, you know, get around? He's pretty prolific. It's so interesting to me. One of the things I found very fascinating is how many followers and viewers you have on YouTube. Now, I say this because I'm a member of many parapsychology organizations, psychical research organizations, and we go to our conferences and, you know, we might have like about 100 people or so, or as far as people on various online forums, you know, you might get like a handful of people. But then I go to your TikTok channel where, for example, you recently did a session on a deceased actor, Matthew Perry from Friends. And that video had over 1 million views. So I think, you know, researchers might feel like, oh, well, you know, we're a small community. There's not that many people interested in this. But it seems like there are so many people interested in this just in a whole other venue. So what do you think is attracting so many people to your videos?
3/4 of the amount of people, of the people I ask for are just regular loved ones of clients, of people that are, you know, asking for me to do a session for their loved one. And they come through remarkable as far as the evidence that we're capturing. But, you know, and of course they're, you know, I don't want to be a hypocrite here, because there are people that are doing this that I question their motives. I question how they're doing, you know, how they're doing their sessions and what are their protocols and what's going on there. But you know, I can't judge anyone else's work. I don't believe everyone else's work. So, I mean, it's a kind of a weird thing there, because I don't know what's going on. I just know what I'm doing. I know my motives. And so, you know, I've been asking for well-known people. I ask for someone that I'm interested in asking for, or someone that people are requesting me to do. They're, you know, a celebrity or someone who's well-known that people are interested in. And I don't know if I'm going to get them. I can't even say after an amazing session, oh, I know 100% I was able to get that person. This is what I was able to capture. And it's up to you to make the determination or to judge on your own through your own intuitive ability, your own intuitive means, your own discernment of whether or not I captured information that, you know, from that person or not. Matthew Perry was someone who was, you know, incredibly popular because of his of being on Friends, and he was, you know, and he died young. He had addiction. I've been almost 19 years recovered in, you know, from addiction. And I'm very active in recovery, 12-step recovery. I do a lot of work with other people and helping people in that regard. So I felt some connection to ask for him. And what I captured was really remarkable, you know, and I put it out there for people to check it out. And so, you know, you'd surely get plenty of people that, you know, this is crap, that's BS, there's no way, it's impossible. And, you know, the amount of misconceptions that people have regarding death, and they think it's fact because they heard it on a movie or they read it somewhere or some medium said something a long time ago and that became fact to them. And I'm saying, well, this is science. I'm sorry. I understand, you know, it's not, I'm not just channeling this or whatever. I'm capturing audible, intelligent responses. I can't tell you that I know for sure, unless Matthew Perry gave me his driver's license through the spirit box, I can't say for sure that it was definitely him, but it very much resonated and it sounded like these answers were indicative of what he might say.
Can you give us some examples of the answers you got from Matthew Perry?
I mean, he said things like, you know, he misses his fans. He said he missed his cell phone.
I heard that.
I thought was interesting because I thought he was just being funny, which I think he was. I think the response was meant to be somewhat, you know, comical in some way. But I didn't know that after I posted that session, many people had told me or left comments saying that his assistant was out getting him a new cell phone.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was reported in the news after, I guess, the session was done. I didn't know. And there's been a lot of instances like that. And I would give you the most, I don't know about the most famous, but for me, it was the greatest sessions, that set of sessions and the greatest connection that I've ever had. And that was with, you know, Gabrielle Petito, which is Gabby Petito, the girl that was missing, that was killed by her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie. She's just an amazing soul. And, you know, she was a young YouTuber herself. So, you know, the fact that she had such an amazing spirit and wanted to come through, you know, intuitively, I connected with her before her body was even found, trying to find out what happened to her before she was even found. And I picked up all this information intuitively that wasn't able to be validated for months and months after, you know, when the information was released. But when I asked for her in sessions, she was able to tell me that Brian killed her.
Through the box now.
Through the box. Not just, you know, not through me, but through the box, that Brian did it, that how he did it, that, I mean, there was no autopsy reports released yet from authorities or anything like that. She was able to, you know, validate specifically what happened to her. She also told us that Brian was dead, that he shot himself. So there, she was probably the soul that came through with the most information prior to any information being released on a public level. And there was just no way for me or anyone else to know that.
And you put all of this on.
Oh, it's all documented and, you know, it's all there. You know, I mean, then eventually, you know, Brian was found and his journal was found with his body. And in the journal was exactly what I had said 5 months prior, intuitively, and what she said through the equipment. I mean, there was news articles written about it.
So this actually suggests that the work you're doing could have value for investigators or for people that are really seeking some information. Now, that may be a long shot because they would have to trust it. And as we know, you know, it's a mixed bag when it comes to law enforcement working with psychics. Many of them do. Some, you know, if it tends to be if what the psychic or remote viewer says goes along with what they already know, they're more inclined to follow it than if it goes against what they're already assuming. But still, it does sound like there could be some potential for assisting investigators here.
I think there absolutely is. But, you know, again, the person that's doing it has to be vetted and they have to be transparent. And they have to be open to letting their process and their techniques and methods being scrutinized to some degree. It just has to be. Because I can tell you right now, without naming names, I know of people out there that have ITC on their channels or in their name or whatever, and they're completely fraud. I mean, they're fraudulent. They're fake. They're doing it for views. So, you know, when you have people out there that are making a mockery of this and mucking up the waters, it makes it very hard for anyone in those other circles to take what we do seriously. You know, the real people that are doing it.
Well, I would love to see investigators or law enforcement, you know, hooking up with someone like yourself and, you know, doing some private work to see, you know, what is it that you can help them with on those cases. And of course, you know, whether it's ITC researchers like yourself or psychics, mediums, remote viewers, anytime we hear about a case, whether it's a missing plane, a missing person, you know, we want to help. We're curious, you know, let me see what I can do to tune in with my psychic abilities, but we also just genuinely want to help. And, you know, getting back to Matthew Perry, I did look at the comments that people made, and it looked like you were really helping a lot of people to process his death. I know you mentioned the skeptical people, but I saw dozens of comments where people were, you know, thanking you. And, you know, when someone dies like that, a public figure that really we come together through our public figures, through our celebrities. And when they die, you know, people are left with what do I do now? Where do I go? And it seems like you're providing a community where people can come together and express their grief and find some hope. I mean, like your t-shirt says there, right there.
It's true. And that's why it needs to be a safe place for people to express themselves. If you express respectful, healthy skepticism, I will spend as much time as I can answering those questions. You don't have to believe this work. Just be respectful, and I'm going to talk to you. It's the people that are, you know, you're a charlatan, you should be ashamed of yourself. Those kinds of comments will get deleted and blocked. I mean, I'm not going to tolerate that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's plenty of people that were, I just don't know how this is possible. How is this possible? Can you explain how this is? I love those kinds of questions because that's how I would feel. That's how I did feel at one point, you know, and the majority of the world feels that way. So that's okay. Now, there are people that have been following me I've been doing this for over 10 years now. And so there have been people that have been following my work for a long time, and they've come to trust me as a source of information that they know that if I'm doing it and I'm putting it out there, they can trust it. And that is an honor to me, you know.
So why don't we talk a little bit about what people who are, let's say, citizen scientists, people that are wanting to investigate this phenomenon, what can they do to tighten up their own protocols? And I'm thinking of that because you and I had taught a class maybe about a year ago in ITC, and it was really cool because we did all kinds of working with your audio equipment and then visual. And I know I've seen videos where you're both working with your audio equipment, but you usually videotape yourself. And there are orbs flying around, not just like flying around you, but flying through you, like flying through your head or through the wall. And they are undeniable. And to me, that's just so cool. But then we had students, you told us what kinds of cameras to get. And so people were filming themselves. And initially, I was watching some of the students' videos, and I was like, oh, gosh, you know, it looks like there's some interesting orbs flying around. But, you know, there was light coming in through the window, so we couldn't rule out. There was a lot we couldn't rule out. And they were doing things that just, you know, having a curtain open, and so maybe headlights could come through, you know, if we want to really rule things out. And even one student who's someone I know very well, and she has spent a lot of time really trying to, you know, control her environment, and she gets really incredible things too. But she had these things like they look like little angels and fairies kind of flying around. But when I saw that, I was like, okay, like this is really phenomenal. But I don't know, if a moth was in the room, if a fly, could that be light bouncing off of a fly? So my idea was like, well, let's test, what does it look like when a moth or a fly, can you get that effect, which would take a lot more time and energy. But then over time, we just made these simple suggestions and they were able, and then this one student, she ended up going to her room where there were no windows, so just simple steps like that. What is there some advice you could give people so that to make sure that they're controlling for these other variables?
You have to be willing to debunk. You have to be willing to throw out some of the evidence and a lot of the evidence. I mean, I record for an hour and yet I'm only posting 20 minutes of a session because in that 20 minutes is what, there was evidence that I captured that it kind of passed my standards. It went through, my vetting process, my review process. One of those students in our classes or in our class there got in front of the night vision camera. And because a lot of people, skeptics will say, well, that's just dust particles or whatever. And I said, take a blanket and really wave it out in front of the camera and see what happens. And you couldn't see any dust particles. So we were able to kind of, and I had to tell some of the students that, no, I'm not too sure about that. That right there, this image here looks a little bit like pareidolia, or it looks like it's already there already. That could be a moth. So I'm doing that to myself. And I don't want to ever hurt anyone's feelings, but I want to be, I want to be honest with them. And I want them to be okay with debunking stuff, because you're going to have to do that in order to, be a citizen scientist. I don't have letters behind my name. I didn't go to a university. I don't have that background, but I'm willing to learn, and I've been learning over 10 years. I've been learning, a lot. So I try to tell people, keep pushing the envelope, keep trying to tighten up your surroundings, keep trying to get into a controlled environment as much as you can. When you do see these light anomalies in my videos, you can see them shoot straight up out of my head, or they'll fly into my head and stop, and then, or they'll come down and stop and make a sharp turn. I had one that went through my bookcase. It went through an inanimate object, and then reformed on the other side. I mean, that's just, these are undeniable pieces of evidence. But there's times that I'm like, nope, that may be, but I'm not too sure about it. And I'm not going to put it in there. That's not, to me, it doesn't seem good.
And that's when I think when we have corresponding things happen, where, you're having these orbs go in and out of your head in your bookcase at the same time, it seems like you're actually getting good communication through the box. In the same way that if you're having an intuitive look at you, they may be getting that same information. I remember when I first met you, and I did a session with you, a clairvoyant session, and I didn't know too much about you. I was really blown away because I'm Jewish, and Jewish people don't typically follow Jesus or believe in Jesus too much. But when I was looking at you, I was seeing a picture of Jesus, and I felt like silly saying this, but it was like, it seems like Jesus is your main spirit guide. And that was exactly what you were feeling and had been telling people, which, I didn't know. Same thing with that student who does get really a lot of phenomena happening. When I did a session with her, I was seeing some very bizarre spirits around her, communicating in some very bizarre ways. And that was actually why she had come to me. I didn't know this, but that was why she came for a reading, because she could barely sleep at night. She's getting so much communication. And I was seeing, they look like these circus performers, and They were kind of projecting like sexual energy. And this was exactly what she's been experiencing. So, you know, again, to people that aren't really into this, this all sounds very bizarre. But when you have psychics, when you have cameras, when you have audio equipment, multiple, the person themselves experiencing things and no one talks about it until you bring all this information together in these unusual ways of knowing, that's when you start to say, okay, like I have to pay attention to this. And it's cool that we do have these different ways of learning about the world and learning about what's really going on around us.
I think that's exactly right. I think that it's, you know, for me, it was always a wonderful feeling to get intuitive information that the person says, oh my God, that's exactly right. There's no way you could have known that or something. You know, that makes me feel like I'm connecting, or when you would get that with me, or, you know, vice versa. But there is something really even more special when you can get something intuitively or and then audibly for everyone to hear or see something comes through the veil, you know, piercing the veil, which is the name of our class, you know, and it comes through in an audible or visual way that's really undeniable, that validates what we're getting, you know. I mean, that's I'm a show me kind of guy. I need to get a little bit more than just, you know, the intuitive side of it. So I think that is really, I think it's amazing. And I think that's where we're headed. I mean, now the world is so much more, you know, it's a technological world, you know, and so, you know, instead of getting lost in the technology, we can use some of it for the right reasons to really help, you know, validate the spirituality. You know what I mean? I think that's really cool.
I think there's pros and cons, because on the one hand, for anyone that's really skeptical and not experiencing them, these things themselves, which, you know, if you don't have these, your own intuitive experiences, why would you believe in any of this stuff, right? Like, it just would seem ridiculous. If you're not having your own experiences, or if you're not so close to someone else who is, and, you know, you witness it over and over again, that might open you up too. But we are in a place now where our technology can so easily replicate, you know, an orb, you know, a voice. So it's in some ways we almost have to go back in time to before you had photo editing, you know. But even then, it's like people could still edit older photographs. So, you know, as far as convincing any skeptics, you know, that's out the window. But as far as those of us, like you say, we're critical thinkers. But I'll give you one example. That also another religious reference. Years ago, when I was first training at the Berkeley Psychic Institute, I think I might have shared this elsewhere, but I was doing like a group reading on this lady, and suddenly I had this image of this figure who just, I just knew right away, like she was Mother Mary. And again, I don't subscribe to these religious concepts, but it seemed like Mother Mary was standing over this woman, giving her a healing. And just as I was like sharing that, or about to share it, because I was kind of embarrassed about the whole thing, but I was seeing this. And then another reader sitting next to me, they saw the same thing. And then the door burst open, and one of my instructors came in, who was like serving as a receptionist for the evening. And he was like, did you just feel that? And we're like, what? You know, why are you interrupting our reading? And he's like, Mother Mary just came through the door. So, you know, you get enough corroboration in that way. But now we also can have the technology come through, even if it's not perfect technology. And, you know, I feel that's what you're doing here. And, you know, we talk a lot about evidence and all of that, but, you know, it gets down to really what is the meaning here for people as well. And I know that so many people are finding solace and peace in in the work that you're doing. And, you know, I love it that you're open about your background. You're open about how you struggled with addiction and that's important too, because it's important that people see that people from all walks of life and from all types of backgrounds, you know, can still be doing this. And unfortunately, there does tend to be this divide between, you know, formal academic researchers and the rest of the population. I think there's a lot of paranormal researchers like you, like just everyday guys or women that are just really doing the work. They're doing the research to the best of their ability, and they're getting a lot of good evidence. And, you know, if we just have this snobby elitist attitude that like, oh, well, they're just, you know, we're going to dismiss them. They're not, you know, classically trained. Then we're missing out on, you know, a lot of really important data. And, you know, but of course, my goal is to bring both worlds together. And, you know, I really hope that some of the formal researchers watching this tonight will get in touch with yourself or other paranormal researchers or ITC researchers out there, and, you know, will form alliances because they can, you know, help make suggestions, you know, for improvement. They can help design experiments that you might not have thought of. And, you know, you can teach them about the equipment and, you know, the things like, you know, yeah, you meditate. We should all be meditating before we do our experiment, and, you know, helpful things like that. So I hope that this interview will help bridge together both those formal academically trained researchers and, you know, other people that are in the trenches who, you know, like yourself, have thousands of hours and cases and clients that you've worked with to, you know, get the results you're getting.
I thank you for that. And I would just say right now to anyone that's watching, you know, that anything I do, you know, is all very real, and I'm willing to show it, you know, at any time, any place, to anyone. There's no part of my process that's proprietary in any way that I can't reveal it. I'll work in controlled environments. I'll go a little further and do cold blind experiments. I'm okay with that. I mean, you know, is it a little nerve wracking sometimes? Sure, it is. And I've done a lot of them though. And so I'm willing to, you know, put myself on the line out there and, you know, and show what it is and work with. I'm looking to work with other institutes and other researchers that, you know, are, you know, more formal researchers. I think that's important.
So thank you so much. We'll be putting up information about your website and book and everything in the editing process. So keep up the great work. I'm so glad you got to meet Joshua Lewis, and I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I really want to thank you for watching our show today, and I really want to encourage you to put comments and questions into the area underneath the video where you can post your comments, because both myself and Josh would be more than happy to respond to your questions and comments. And please do subscribe. You're not going to want to miss a single episode of the New Thinking Aloud over the coming months, because there are so many incredible guests on their way and so many incredible hosts with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlov and Emmy and a whole new lineup of guest hosts as well with New Thinking Aloud. I'll have some new interviews too that I'm super excited about. So I really want to thank you for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, remember to comment, and we'll talk to you soon.
New Thinking Aloud is a nonprofit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.